Kyle, welcome back to the show, man. How are things? How's the family? How's everybody doing?
Everybody's doing well. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ed. Everyone's doing well. We're, you know, it's been great to spend a lot of time at home, but it's also nice to be back in the rink with our team now as well. So it's an exciting time for us, and you know, we're happy just to have the chance to get back in the rink and get at it.
So Kyle, just correct me if I'm wrong, but I did read a few places. Just want to confirm with you. You are going to quarantine intensely with the squad. Is that right? And that's July 26th.
Yeah, from Sunday on. I mean, right now we're abiding by all the league protocols. Essentially, stay at home as much as possible. You know, no restaurants, no bars, not a lot of indoor activity. But starting this Sunday, the 19th to the 26th, it's just home and at the rink. And then on the 26th, we'll move into the hotel and into the bubble. So that's the plan for me and for all of us.
So obviously, some tough decision making, you know, choices you and the group had to go through. And it's not just, okay, we're bringing four goalies. It's literally, who are we bringing, hopefully, to help get us to the Stanley Cup? When you look at the entire operation and making those choices, what did you factor?
Yeah, thanks. You're right, Don. It was a difficult process. And, you know, especially when you have people, whether it's members of management or different members of the staff that have been with the organization for, you know, I look at it like I'm about to go into my seventh season here. And there have been people that have been here the entire time that either started at the same time or predate me by, in some cases, two decades. And when you have a chance to, you know, I think all 24 teams look at it as a chance to do something special and to win, you know, you want those people to be a part of it. But, you know, the way that we approached it was that if it wasn't a player going in, we wanted to have as many people as we could that directly influence the player's performance and make it, you know, give them every benefit we could. So focus on our performance staff, our medical staff, our strength and conditioning people. What are the players' needs going to be? Because, you know, as we know, the first round, we're going to have a back-to-back set of games there. It's going to be a lot of games in rapid succession. There's no travel involved, obviously, through the qualifying round and first two rounds, but it's still going to be a grind, especially considering that the players haven't had a full season to kind of get themselves into that playoff-style conditioning. So we felt that that was where we need to spend our focus and make it as much about the players as possible.
Kyle Dubas, GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs here on Tim and Sid. Nick Robertson is an interesting name here, Kyle, and I know you and I have talked about him on this show previously, and it's been 2 days of camp, and in each of the last 2 days, I've seen video from reporters present recording Nick Robertson doing things that are very interesting, like taking the puck from Jake Muzzin basically at will and getting a scoring chance in a drill and beating Frederick Anderson kind of with ease. How difficult is it on your end to slow this hype train? I've been in this market a long time. I've seen young players have sparks. At times, Toronto can be a dangerous place for that. Where are you at mentally for that, Kyle, considering the kid is just kind of, he's very determined.
Yeah, I think the thing with Nick is that we knew just because of his personality and his mindset, Sid, that he was going to come in and he wasn't going to do what a lot of young players do, which is kind of tiptoe around on the ice and sort of try to figure out what his place is. You know, he's going to try to come with the mindset that he's going to leave it all out here and try to make the team. And so this training camp has been a little bit different in that I think the guys are, you know, knowing that we're going to have this couple of weeks and then we're going to be right into playoff series, they're a little bit more competitive than they would be in mid-September, knowing that, you know, we've got a couple of days of practice, then, you know, multiple weeks of exhibition games to kind of get ourselves ready for opening night. So, you know, he's had some good moments out here, but I think as we get going on, that will be the true tale for where Nick really stands. Because I think as some of the older, more veteran players sort of get back into their regular form or their top form, how he responds to that is really going to be what we're looking for and how he performs at that point. Right now, he's the guy as an 18-year-old, knowing that he has to really make an impact, and knowing, and that combined with his general mindset and how he is every day, I think that's what's led to some of those moments being captured. And I think that there has been a lot of focus on him because of the season that he had in Peterborough and with the U.S. World Junior team. But in his case in particular, you know, there are players where I would worry about that going to their head or them getting a little bit complacent and it knocking them off their projection because they're resting on their statistics and the hype. I don't worry about it with Nick. He's such a driven person. The accolades that go along with this are really going to do nothing to his are going to do nothing for his advancement towards his goal. He wants to be certainly an NHL player and not just someone that's a prospect that's doing some interesting things in practices and scrimmages. So I don't worry about that because of his mindset and who he is as a person. But I think you're right, Sid. It is on us to always be mindful of that. And with the number of media that our team attracts being in Toronto, it's something that we always are looking to stay on top of and not make those mistakes.
You mentioned that media attention. There was a report of a positive test on your team, Austin Matthews, before Austin later confirmed it. And there was an online debate afterwards and whether or not the public and fans really had a right to know. Positive tests in the reporting, it's something that's going to be ongoing. When that scenario happened and you saw those reports, how did you feel at the time?
I feel that it's a private situation, and Austin did not volunteer any information for public consumption. And it wasn't in competition, so he wasn't missing time or games with us, and I didn't really feel that it was something that needed to be publicly reported, respectfully. And that was just my way of viewing it, Donovan. I know different people have different ways of looking at it, but I think I know in different sports, other athletes and in different walks of life, whether it's actors or musicians, have come forward with their different diagnoses, positive or negative. My feeling is it's a personal, private thing, and it wasn't impacting his ability to perform for our team. And if he wanted it private, it should have been left private, as it has for every other NHL player.
Kyle Dubas, Leafs GM, here on Tim and Sid. Austin, Kyle, was pretty forthright about where he thought his conditioning was yesterday, and he wasn't happy with it. I'm no doctor. I'm the furthest thing from, but the one thing we're all learning with COVID-19 is what this can do to your respiratory system and what it has done to so many people. Mm-hmm. How far behind do you think he is conditioning-wise compared to the other guys?
Yeah, it's tough to say because they weren't all working at the same rate and doing the same thing through phase two, which was the voluntary phase. So I thought he was awfully hard on himself and about that, and strong humility on his side. But I think in this next couple of weeks, so not just with Austin, but with all of our players, of course, there's the medical element, but there's certainly the conditioning part of it. I have no worries in the long run that by August 2nd that he'll be up at full strength and in top physical condition.
Does this unique scenario and going through it really kind of the first time of basically taking all of these Ferraris out of a garage and asking them to perform at a high level, does it change the way you'll manage and rotate your team and your roster moving through the next couple of weeks and months?
Yeah, interesting question, Don. I wish we had the ability to kind of move guys around and rest them, but because we're also jumping in right into the playoffs, and it's sort of all on the line, it sort of eliminates that ability to, I guess, manage the loads of the players, as it were. And we've kind of tasked ourselves with, certainly trying to thread the needle on wanting them to be, number one, they've got to be healthy, but number two, their conditioning has to be at an elite level, and technically they need to be at an elite level in order to go through what could be, over 2 months worth of up to, for us, five rounds of playoffs and trying to accumulate 19 wins and win the Stanley Cup. So, our performance staff, led by Rich Rotenberg and Paul Ayotte, they do a great job of wanting to push the players to their maximum level without pushing them too far to where they're getting hurt. And we don't want anybody getting hurt. And then Sheldon does a great job in coaching to make sure that he's getting feedback from the players on where they're at to kind of back up the objective stuff that we can gather in terms of the players' output and make sure that we're not doing anything that's going to put them into a tough spot while also pushing them to the absolute limit that we can to get them ready for August 2nd.
Kyle Dubas, Leafs GM, here on Tim and Sid. Timothy Liljegren not on the Phase 3 roster as of right now, Kyle. Obviously, there's only so much you can tell me about his status, so I want to ask about that. The rules, though, in terms of your roster and what and when a guy can go back on in terms of Phase 4, what are forgive me because we're all still walking through this kind of together. What are the actual rules about Liljegren that you have to follow? When can you put him back on the roster? When can't you?
So whenever a player is deemed fit to play by the medical staff, regardless of what the ailment is that is preventing them from being fit, as long as they pass by all protocols that all of us are having to go through right now as we're trying to operate during the pandemic, if it's within Phase 3, he'd be ready to roll. We just have to be below the 30 skater maximum. When it pertains to a player going into Phase 4, at least my understanding of it now, and I think because the situation is always very fluid as we try to go through this as safely as we can, that a player can come into Phase 4 to substitute for another player as long as your team is beneath the 52-person threshold and the skater maximum, and upon entry they would have to go through the different varying medical protocols in terms of testing and quarantining, which I believe is four negative tests consecutively before you're permitted to join team activity.
Is he in a spot, Kyle, where you would be surprised if he wasn't potentially ready for August 2nd?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be my thought on it. Yes, but that said, it's such a short window in camp, and we kind of have to develop that roster by the 25th to travel in on the 26th. So, it's why anything that creates a fitness level concern of a player is especially perilous at this time, because it could eliminate them from even if it's just something that's a day or two. There's a lot of gains being made by players in those days. So, it's unfortunate, but I think it's just a reality that every team will deal with. As the players get back up and running physically after being, really not at that level for the last 4 months during the shutdown.
So MLS and NBA players are already in bubbles, and we know what their players are concerned with because they're tweeting photos of their food like they're at the Fyre Festival. But in talking to your players as they get ready for the next phase and getting into the bubble, what are some of the concerns you're hearing? Are there any learnings from what we've already seen in other sports that you guys can apply to make sure your guys are feeling comfortable?
I think the way that we have to approach it, Donovan, is that, and I've seen some of the stuff from not just sports, but other bubbles that are existing for businesses to operate. And my major message here internally, and what Sheldon and I have tried to convey to our players, is that I think there's going to be there's two ways that we can go through this whole thing. Number one is we can, always relate it back to the way that travel and hotels and our lives were when, I would say pre-March 2020, when they were still fairly normal, and certainly in the NHL and at when you operate in all major sports leagues, it's a pretty luxurious and lavish lifestyle in terms of hotels and modes of travel and so on and so forth. And we're very, very lucky and fortunate to be able to operate that way. So if you compare it back to that every day, you're going to be able to generate a lot of complaints, and you're going to be unhappy with where you're at. The other way to look at it, which I think is the teams that will be successful will look at it, is you have to abide by the protocols. You have to accept that life is not as it was prior to the pandemic beginning, and the hotel may not be as nice. The mode of travel may not be as nice. You may not have the same freedoms to go to whatever restaurant you want whenever you want. You're going to have to wear a mask, and if you can accept and embrace that you have the chance to play professional sports at a time when a lot of people in the world are going through a lot of very bad things, both in terms of perhaps their jobs or their health or various other afflictions that they're suffering from at this time, that's the best way to attack this, is that we have a chance to go and play games with millions of people watching, and it's a great opportunity for us and an experience that we're never going to forget. Nobody's ever going to forget this as long as they live. And we have the chance to be a distraction for people during this time and do something special as a group. And that's what we've implored our players and how we've implored them to approach it. I think the teams that go the other way are going to get sick. They're not going to take it seriously, and they're not going to have success.
Kyle Dubas here on Tim and Sid. Kyle, one last thing. The one thing we haven't talked a ton about because there's been so many other topics is how odd a best of five is in this National Hockey League world. And there are coaches that haven't done this for a long time and GMs that haven't done this for a long time. Yourself and Sheldon, this is kind of old hat for you guys, right? Like, what number best of five series is this in your pro career with Sheldon Keefe?
Well, with Sheldon, so in every year that I've been here, save for this year, of course, with the Marlies, we've been in a best of five. The first round in the American League is always best of five. So it would be, I want to say this, Sheldon and I have been four together. I'm just kind of trying to go back in my head in terms of who they were against: Bridgeport, Albany, Utica, and then Rochester. So we've gone through four of those in the past, and I think that's one thing, you know, he and I have talked about. The other part is that, a majority of our roster have been on those Marley teams, so they've also been in a best of five. And so they, I think, understand the urgency of it. And the other part about those best of fives in the American League is, especially, I think, when we've gone on the road to play them, for whatever reason, in the American League, at times, the first round can be a hard series to sell. So the buildings, Utica would be the exception because it was jam-packed, but some of the other buildings that we played in, whether it was Albany or even going back to 2016 in Bridgeport, there weren't many people in the building. So it will be a very similar experience at a higher level in the NHL, of course, that our players and certainly Sheldon have faced in the American League. So whether that will matter or not, I don't know, but it certainly doesn't leave it as one of the unknown things that we're dealing with.
You recently tweeted out a photo of your players wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts, and it was a visual that I never thought I would see. Certainly, I didn't think even months ago I would see it. What does that visual mean to you? I certainly know what it means to me.
Mm-hmm. So, Donovan, to me, I think what our players did yesterday and what they've been doing, I think, since the end of May, when the matter of systemic racism came to the forefront again in North America, is this was this time, rather than, you know, a one moment send out a tweet or send out a statement, this to me has been very different. It's been an effort from our players to educate themselves and learn the recognition that as white athletes and white members of management and executive in the NHL, we live a very privileged life, and even though we've all at times have prided ourselves with being involved with different anti-racism or the Pride Parade or different things, you know, it's not enough for us just to do those things once a year and think that that's enough, that we're doing our part to end the different injustices or prejudices that exist in our society. Yesterday was one of my, I would say, more prouder moments in time that I've worked in hockey or worked with people in general, because it was a group of athletes who, you know, unfortunately on our team are all white, standing using their platform and their voice to continue the conversation that began in, that's been going on for hundreds of years, but has really kind of come to the forefront again and been progressing since late May. After the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And I thought it was totally driven by our players. It was not driven by us or us telling them to do it. They wanted to do it. And I was extremely proud of our players for that yesterday, that they want to use their platform here as the Maple Leafs and as athletes in Toronto, which is one of the most diverse cities in the world, to do our part with anti-racism and any injustice that's happening in society. So I was very proud of our players for that and their passion for continuing this conversation and bringing about change in this movement.
Well, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys do next.
And as we said to Brendan Shanahan when we had a conversation with him a while back on this very topic, whatever you need, Kyle, along those lines to further the message, just let us know, definitely.
Well, thank you. I think for me, I've read what Donovan has written a few times here since the end of May. And I think, you know, with the way that we look at it as an organization is we can play, we have to play, not that we can, but we have to play a major part in progressing and not only bringing about change, but progress in these areas where racism has lived for hundreds of years in Canada and the United States and throughout the world. So I appreciate that from your end, and we'll look forward to always continuing the conversation with you all.